Welcome to Investigating Angel, an Angel rewatch podcast where we analyze each episode of Angel the series with no spoilers. We are your hosts, Leia
and Sarah,
and if you love Angel, this is the podcast for you.
Hey guys, welcome back to Investigating Angel. Today we are talking about season one, episode 13, She. And before we jump into the episode, so Leia, I have to say this is probably the number one episode that I've been really looking forward to this entire season. And I know everyone's like, what do you mean by that? Can you guess why that would be?
It's a really interesting plot. There's some really funny moments. We've got some shirtless Angel in the mix today.
Yeah. Could it be
We
have some extra guests here with us. Maybe that's Leia's like racking her brain. Clearly we did not talk about this before we started, but no, today we have Prophecy Girls here with us and I am so excited.
Surprise, shorty.
Thanks for coming, you guys.
Thanks for having us. We're so excited. Finally breaking into Becoming Buffy podcast.
Right? So, okay. I just have to ask, and I know every single listener out there is going to be asking this question as well. Why she?
Why not she?
Ooh, like, good answer.
Leia kind of already laid out the highlights, one being shirtless Angel. But
what have I got myself into? I'd be more here under false pretenses.
I thought we were clear. That's why you and I are here. but I mean, obviously for me, the draw was the Asian actress that I'm sure you have a lot of information on. And the fact that we have a lot to talk about around her purpose, mm-hmm. The themes of this episode, it's fascinating. Do I think it's a good episode? No, but it's got so much. And I think it's time for us to unpack it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a good episode, but certainly watching it kind of in isolation like this, and I've rewatched Angel more recently than I've rewatched Buffy, but watching it in isolation, there's actually a lot going on in this episode that lays groundwork for future episodes. And I know we can't talk about spoilers, for anybody who is watching this series for the first time while you listen to Investigating Angel, pay attention to these episodes because there is payoff coming when they talk about things like, I don't know, portals, right? It's like, what's going on there?
So true.
It's so funny because, I mean, Leia and I just recorded Expecting last week. And it's so funny, like a lot of people and a lot of reviews and stuff, everyone points to this episode, She, as the worst of the season. And I honestly think Expecting is worse than this episode. I think that 100% thematically, it's worse. Both episodes
are... Is that the one where Cordy has a fake mystical pregnancy?
Yeah.
It's real. Yeah, thanks for not inviting us onto that one.
We did you a favor.
Yeah, I think this episode, it's well shot. I think that the premise, the themes, the metaphor is so fascinating. It's not done well, but I think that it had a much more interesting premise than Expecting, a much less problematic one. Whether they did that well or not, we will discuss. But I think that this episode really... it felt like it was going somewhere and it kept my attention and it had just so many just funny moments that I think just made it the icing on the cake, you know? So I don't know. I agree that it's not a great episode, but I don't think it's as bad as some of the ones we've talked about so far.
No, absolutely not. And also this episode has a lot of like, I don't know, I'm on Tumblr and like on social media and stuff. A lot of scenes from this episode are like iconic, like gif-able scenes, like scenes that you see people talk about all the time because they're hilarious.
I had forgotten that this episode has the famous dream sequence of Angel dancing.
Yeah, same.
Oh, yes.
I was so surprised. I was pleasantly surprised. I was like, this one? I can really pick them.
I have this vivid memory growing up here in Canada, and Stephanie, I don't know if you remember this. So we had the Space Channel. That's where I was watching Buffy when I was a kid. It's now the CTV Sci-Fi Channel because corporate-owned media has to destroy everything special. but they would run these promos for the various shows on their channel, and the promo for Angel would have this clip of Angel dancing and then him saying, "I don't dance." And without any context that this is a show about a vampire and stuff, it's very bizarre, like watching that promo and being like, what's the show about?
Right. And then you watch the David actual
Boreanaz.
Show. You're like, wait, what? No. So I'm actually, again, pleasantly surprised as we were watching it. I was like, okay, like this is not as bad as I remember. It's still not amazing, but yeah. So I'm excited to hear your guys' thoughts. I have a couple of like interesting things that I found myself. So let's dive in, you guys. All right. So She aired February 8th, 2000, was written by, shocker, Marty Noxon and David Greenwalt. And okay, Prophecy Girls. I don't know if you guys have discovered this in your rewatches, but I'm finding that the episodes that have more than one writer on an episode typically means that it's not going to be a great episode. Like, it's very rare to find an episode written by more than one that you're like, I bet you someone struggled in writing this, so they brought in someone else. Like, Doomed had three writers, and I'm like, it just struggles to be so cohesive. And I don't know if you guys have seen that as well.
What I would say is that it is very unlike Prophecy Girls to provide that kind of information and very unique to your podcast to make those conclusions. Yeah.
This is the lowest rated episode of the series and one of only three episodes. Yes. Yeah, I know.
That's racist. I mean, you have Lonely Heart and I Fall to Pieces, and this is the lowest rated episode. And expecting...
People watched Expecting and then decided not to tune in for this one.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, it must take like a break been. For a while.
Yeah, definitely. So there are three episodes rated below seven. I don't know what they are. I haven't looked into them. But most people consider this the worst episode of the series. Like, this is kind of the Angel the version beer of bad. Beer Bad. Yeah.
Beer, leave Beer Bad alone, everybody. Just leave it alone, right? I'm sick of this.
After the Where the Wild Things Are and certain other episodes of Buffy, I definitely would watch Beer Bad over those for sure.
Double Meat Palace exists over on Buffy. Like,
seeing red.
There are.
Yeah. Yeah. Justice for Beer Bad. That's all I got to say. Yeah. I'm out. That's what I came here to say.
Wholeheartedly agree. So Bai Ling, who plays Jira, she said of her character, "She's so cool. She seduced Angel, and yet she's very dangerous and independent. She's got all those things that a modern woman wants, yet she's a princess. She has her own duty to do good things for the people in her land. She's got all this complexity and beauty." She also said that the character was considered for a return, which I did not know. She says, "After that episode aired, David Greenwalt called me. They were so pleased by it. They wanted me to come back. I'd very much like to go back to Angel because we all had a great time and they loved the character. I don't know what the schedule is. I guess they're still working on it. So we're going to talk about it when it is ready. I'm looking forward to contributing something." And sadly, that never happened. And I wonder, I've heard mixed things. Some people said that Bai Ling's schedule filled up. Other people said that the network was like, "Hey, this did not do well. We don't want this character to come back," which is a shame because I don't think the weakness of this episode is Bai Ling or her character. Mm-hmm. I think it has to do with other things. So
that would have been really interesting to see her come back in like season three with all of that stuff that's going on there. No spoilers, but you know what I mean.
I think it might have made this episode better if we'd had a continuation, because would have been like, okay, it's not great, but it's setting up some like, you know, other character stuff that maybe would have been fulfilled later on. So So Jira is, and Steph, I'd be really curious your input in this. So Jira is, I believe, supposed to be a representation / subversion of the stereotypical dragon lady. The dragon lady is usually a stereotype of certain East Asian and occasionally South Asian and or Southeast Asian women as strong, deceitful, domineering, mysterious, and often sexually alluring. Inspired by the characters played by actress Anna May Wong, the term comes from the female villain in the comic strip Terry and the Pirates. It's been applied to powerful women from certain regions of Asia. It's one of two main stereotypes used to describe Asian women. It's the other one is lotus blossom, which is kind of the opposite of the dragon lady stereotype. It's very like the more like, I guess you would say, submissive type woman. And Hollywood has been doing this for a long, long time. And it's still kind of doing it to this day. Like I was even kind of looking up, like they are talking a lot about Lucy Liu in Kill Bill, in Charlie's Angels. She still is very much like the dragon lady stereotype, this very hyper-sexualized Asian ethnicity roles. And it's really interesting because I honestly never really thought about it very much. But then once I started like thinking back, especially I feel like the 90s had a lot of this. And I mean, it's just, it's kind of a bummer when you go back and you're like, oh, yeah, they really are hypersexualizing a certain ethnicity. But I don't know, yeah. Steph, did you have anything on that?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. So the two personalities for Asian actresses that over, like since film began in the 20s and the 30s, that's the two that you're allowed to be. You are either the dominating, sexual, strong female type, or you are the demure, naive, pure one. And there was no in between. And that was actually something that Hollywood had some sort of law back in the day of things that you cannot show on screen. And that lasted mm-hmm. for a very long time. One of them, of course, was interracial relationships, mm-hmm. Which of course means that if you were going to have someone of Asian descent in a movie, she's not going to be your typical damsel in distress. She's not going to be the leading lady. She's going to be one of these two archetypes. So yeah, you're absolutely right with Lucy Liu and all of the Asian, like Car and I make jokes about the Asians we see on Buffy all the time. They're always vampires because they're always obviously the stunt doubles and stuff in the background. But I think Hollywood is facing that reckoning now. In the last couple of years, right? Crazy Rich Asians was the biggest rom-com to come out in years, like a decade, and it was an all-Asian cast, like unheard of. The last one was 25 years ago or something for the Joy Luck Club. Wow. And I remember watching that when I was a little girl and being like, look at these strong women that are actually depicted not as the stereotypes you get in an action movie or the sexualized woman that the guy's trying to fight over. Yeah, so I think there's definitely that being brought into this character in this episode, and I don't remember this episode. Like I'm not familiar with Angel. I obviously have seen it, but I have not rewatched it in a very long time. So I know I wanted to do She because I just knew that out of all the episodes in Angel, this one featured an Asian woman, and we can definitely you've already laid out why she's interesting and intriguing. But I love that we're already talking about how the stereotypes are playing into her depiction on this show. And not to mention the fact that this show, it's not Buffy's show. This is Angel's show, a strong white man. And I have things to say later on about as much as she's strong. She is there to save her people and she doesn't give a shit what guy gets in her way. Yet the strong white man's still going to come and save her, right? And that's just, I mean, that's his show. But that's something I noticed too.
Yes, girl, same. I do too. And I also wanted to add too, like, and this is just from Wikipedia, but I thought it was so interesting. They talked about how in 1875, the U.S. passed the Page Act, which limited the number of Chinese women allowed to immigrate into the United States, barring women from China, Japan, or any other Asian origin countries to enter into the U.S. as part of the anti-Chinese movement. And it was basically because they were like, oh, these Chinese women are bringing in prostitution. And it was once more like this idea that all Asian women are one thing. They are all, you know, they're enticing these men, therefore we must protect our men, you know. And I thought that was really interesting because you see that translated onto film with the dragon lady. And then like that's even, we're still feeling echoes of that, you know. Many years later.
Yeah, and I have things to say about that too as you go through the episode. The sexualization of this character, all her other I don't know, sisters, women in her culture are, they're not Asian. You know, she's the only one. And yeah, she's heavily sexualized. Her boobies are out. You know?
That old boob window.
Classic Asian. yeah, it's just, yeah. this episode brings out all to the surface, and it's like a great piece to discuss.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's problematic. That's for sure.
It's like it tries to be subversive, but I don't think it actually accomplishes that at all, honestly.
Yeah. I don't think it ever could. I think it was reaching from the very beginning.
I agree. So, all right. So the underlying metaphor is Jira's mission is an allusion to ending female genital mutilation, as if, you know, we weren't talking about Asian stereotypes. Now we're talking about this as well, because women in some societies undergo the procedure even to this day, and it's considered to make them marriageable, I say in quotations. Even the verbiage used by the men calling her it, and even the title she, as well as the metaphor, imply that they are trying to take away her autonomy, take away her personhood. And yeah, we're going to talk about whether we think this was done successfully or problematically. All right. Jumping into the episode, we start off at a popping party at Cordelia's, which, okay, thank you. We spent an entire episode on Cordelia's amazing apartment that is a beautiful set, and we've like not seen it at all. So like, let's have a party there. And guess who's cutting up the dance floor? Wesley.
And that beautiful, beautiful sweater that he's wearing.
That he didn't knit himself.
He didn't knit. No.
Cordelia is greeting guests, trying to make excuses for Wesley, and she comes over to Angel, who is sitting in, okay, not a corner. He is actually attempting to mingle, so I'm going to give him props and credit here, but looking decidedly uncomfortable.
He looks like a wall. He's just standing. He's like a box. He's just like this.
He's trying, Leia. He's trying so hard.
Is he?
I mean, okay, he's trying as hard as Angel can try. Like, I can't see Angel, like, necessarily, like, having, like, a ton of in-depth conversations with anybody. But, you know, he's doing his best.
I miss Cordelia. Yeah. This is one reason I'm happy to be here. This episode has more Cordelia in it than the ones that we reviewed of Angel so far. I just miss her so much. She's so good. And in this episode, like, just every scene with her is gold. She's an amazing human being.
It's unfortunate that it took Doyle's death for Cordelia to really kind of come into her own, because even in the episodes, apart from Room with a View, Cordelia wasn't really in the show a whole lot. It was a lot of Doyle and a lot of Angel. And I think, too, that Cordelia and Wesley work really well as a dynamic, and they're pairing them a lot together. And it's just so fun to watch. And I'm really enjoying it.
Mm-hmm. Alexis Denisoff has a really good quote about, like, Cordelia and Wesley's relationship, and it's just interesting. I'll read it later or something when we get to like one of their scenes, but it's pretty
good. Wesley comes up to Angel and is like, "Whew, I need to cool off. Our little Cordelia knows how to put on a do." I love how they keep giving him lines from someone from like the 50s. So funny.
Especially when he goes making out with little Cordelia not too long ago.
Yeah. Hey, was a hot kiss, man. That was pretty good. Yeah. Listen, we're on Angel. We're a little starved.
Oh, you mean the one from parting gifts? The one from the last episode? No, not the last episode.
No, I'm talking about graduation day. Remember, I haven't watched Angel.
Okay. No, not that one. I was going to say, I was like, Sarah, I don't think you guys are talking about the same kiss.
I was like, I'm sorry.
Steph's trying to be polite. She's like, back it up. Sarah, well, it's your boat. No, I am talking about parting gifts, because that kiss was fantastic, and it redeemed Wesley's graduation day kiss with Cordelia. But also, we are a little thirsty over here in Angel, because there's very, very little sexual tension, which is why this episode was a change.
Delicious.
I won't say a refreshing change, but it was a change. All right. So Wesley's looking for more food, looks down at his plate. Oh, the script is pretty funny. It cut out a part in the scene where apparently they ran out of those delicious sauerkraut little Swiss sandwiches. And it says he looks down at the table, empty plate, his face falls. And he goes, "Oh, they would go fast." And then immediately Angel produces a paper party plate from behind his back, and he had saved several sandwiches for Wesley.
Oh, my God. That is adorable.
Sauerkraut. Whore's divorce at a party? I don't know about that. That sounds stinky.
I have questions about where Cordelia is getting all the money to afford this apartment, Angel? And this party.
It's also a very grown-up party, right? Like, she's 19. Yeah. Right? Yeah. In this season?
Yeah.
And I'm not so naive that I think a 19-year-old doesn't know somebody in LA who can get her beer, but like the party itself feels like something a 25-year-old would throw.
Yeah.
Older. Yes.
You know. Yeah. The show trying to age up Cordelia. That's what's happening here.
Yeah. We like to remind people like almost every episode that she is 19 because the show really does want us to kind of forget how old she is and think that she's like in her mid to late 20s, and that's not, not true. It's lies. Say it with me, Steph. It's lies.
Yeah, and unfortunately it's the kind of thing where you're like, that's where I think reality clashes with the fantasy a little bit, because you're like, ooh, okay. But again, and as our viewers like to remind, or our listeners like to remind us, Angel is a separate show from Buffy, and so sometimes the choices that they make are trying to benefit this specific universe, and it isn't always with thought to what's going over on Buffy or how they tie in together. So we will suspend our belief as much as we can, or our disbelief. So then this girl comes up, and as Kara mentioned earlier, she is complimenting Wesley on his sweater, very much like trying to start a conversation with him. He just completely puts his foot and his sandwich in his mouth. He's like, oh, certainly not by me. And she's like, I mean, it's just, it's a great sweater. And he's like, well, I'll pass that on then to the person who knit it. I mean, I would if I knew who did. Oh, like, Wesley, just stop, stop.
It's endearing.
It started off so strong, and it just kind of went down from there. All right, so Angel is feeling like he's out of his element, and Cordelia's like, hey, you need to actually try. And so he gets out there, and he's talking to this girl named Laura, who's talking about her master's degree in fine arts, launching her own business. Angel's just not interested in this at all. And then we have this iconic moment where she says, oh, I love this song. Hey, would you like to dance? And then we have this flash. Oh my gosh, what is this? What is this?
I know. Who choreographed him? Did he do it himself? Was yes. He like, let just put like turn the camera on, I got this? Or did he have somebody come and be like, do this now and then do this? Like I want to know.
I think that's what makes this scene so fun, is like at the start of the scene, Angel is standing there and Wesley dances over. And what I picked up on was this physicality. And speaking of colors, Sarah, you know, in this episode and in several of these early episodes with Wesley, Wesley is wearing like white and Angel wears black, right? And they're trying to contrast these two characters. So Wesley's like, even when he's standing still, he's moving.
Yeah.
Angel, if you look carefully, like he is completely still. He is the only still thing in that shot as Wesley and people in the background are moving and the music's bopping. And I'm thinking of like David Boreanaz, like having that awareness of like, okay, like my character's standing there, like Angel's just going to stand there. You know, he's not even really looking around that much. He's because partly it's because he's a predator, right? So he's very good at staying still while he's stalking his prey. But that's what makes what you're referencing now, where he imagines if he lets loose, that's what makes it so funny, right? Is we can't imagine Angel moving so frenetically.
Nope, not at all.
Nope, so badly.
Oh my God.
So to answer your question, Steph, and I think Leia's probably going to elaborate on this, the script actually says, an Angel is suddenly on the dance floor doing that crazy David Boreanaz dance. So, yeah.
Okay. So he must have been doing it behind this the scenes. Like,
if anybody has seen any interviews with David Boreanaz, every time he goes on a talk show, he does the same dance as he's walking out. It's always like the shoulder thing, and it's always the hand thing, and the
little
like,
claps
feet.
Is what gets me.
The tiny claps.
Little like golf claps as he's like. Well, apparently, Tim Minear had originally put this dance in Sense and Sensitivity, which would have made so much sense. It wouldn't have been imaginative. An imaginative dance. It probably would have actually happened because he's like, you know, had under the truth spell or whatever. But he removed it on Joss Whedon's request. Plus, Minear says, we wanted to save it until it was just right. So they saved it. And I'm really glad they threw it into this episode, because this episode just needed a little extra oomph, honestly. And it's just great.
A little sugar and spice, and that was it. I loved that scene. I thought it was so funny. And again, it was a surprise. I didn't know it popped up in this one. I was like, what a treat.
It is a really like random scene to just put into this episode.
Yeah, it is. Well, okay, so I have a question for you guys. So I know the takeaway is that he doesn't want to embarrass himself, but my headcanon is that he knows it would bring him too much joy and he would lose his soul.
That is a possibility. I mean, that's why some conservative Christians believe you shouldn't dance, right? It'll bring you closer to hell.
You'll lose your soul.
I'm sorry.
Devil's dance.
I'm sorry, sir. Did you say that he thought he'd be embarrassed? Are you saying his dancing's not cool? Because I think he's worried that everybody else is going to feel inferior compared to him.
Oh, dude, is that what he's getting the vibe from as everyone's watching Wesley?
I think he's being very gracious as a guest at this party. He doesn't want them to feel out of place once he starts dancing. He doesn't want to make anyone else feel jealous. Or like they can't dance next to him, right? That's what
I know. He's being a good friend for Wesley. That's what it is. He doesn't want to outshine Wesley.
What a hero.
Yeah. Ugh, what a man.
As usual.
Yeah, what a dark
man. As usual.
So Angel.
I didn't remember this, but at the very end of the episode, if you stay, instead of the credits, there's actually a bonus scene of Angel and Wesley both dancing on the dance floor.
Yeah, that was funny too. I was like, oh, good. Know when you strike gold. That's what the editors did. They're like, yep, we got to play this again.
So Angel dejectedly walks into the very quiet dining room and is very happy to be by himself and sees Phantom Dennis. Hey, Dennis. And we have this cute exchange where he's like, hey, you still dead? Dennis opens a little bit of beer. I was going to say soda. We're not on Buffy anymore. Opens beer, slides it over to Angel. Know the feeling. And he's just back in the dark once again. Because it's Angel.
I love that. I love that the only person that he connects with at this party is another dead person.
I love Dennis. I wish we had more Dennis in this series. Like, he's just such a delightful character.
Talk about, like, potential, like, dropped potential.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Okay. We're not there yet. Let's enjoy it now. Thanks for that, Kara. No. So, okay. Then we cut to Pete Wilkers, the security guard. He's looking pretty nervous. He's in what looks like a freezer, and there are giant coffin-like boxes around. And you can tell he wants to open this box, but he's like trying to keep himself. He walks into the next room, hears this like weird like moaning sound, and runs back into the freezer compartment and just busts open the lock, and then we have the cut. All right. So then in Angel's office, there were a lot of interesting shots in this episode, which I feel like made for a really rather interesting perspective. Like, we're over Angel's shoulders. We come into the office. Normally we're watching from Cordelia's perspective as Angel comes in. And that happens quite a bit in this episode where we're kind of watching things from Angel's perspective. And it just made it like really, really interesting. So Cordelia hands Angel the coffee beans and is like, hey, you know, you have super strength. Can you just like crush it? And Angel's like sitting there holding it, like not sure if he like should do this or not. And they have this conversation about the party. And Cordelia criticizes Angel's lack of conversation and enthusiasm and says that he sucked the life out of the party. And
his face. He looks like somebody just killed his dog. He was so sad.
Isn't that his resting face?
Well, it was like that, but more.
This is what I love about Cordelia, and this is what I've missed now that she's not on Buffy. Cordelia tells it like it is, right? She's not afraid to tell people what she thinks. And I think this is especially important for somebody like Angel, where so many people are intimidated by Angel, or in the case of somebody like Xander, they just don't like Angel, and so that clouds their judgment. Or in love with Angel, like Buffy. Cordelia, right here, right? She's like, no, you ruined my party. Like, she's like, you know, she's like, get over yourself.
Yeah.
Like, do better, Angel, right? And so, despite the fact that he is a centuries old vampire and also her boss, Cordelia always tells him what's on her mind. And I really respect that about her.
I find this conversation between them So interesting, because we reminded ourselves earlier, Cordelia's young, right? She's 19. I mean, you know, supposedly 19. She could be 25 now. Who knows? But
same.
Time works differently in LA.
Don't talk to me about time and this series. It's so confusing.
Just ask Leonardo DiCaprio's girlfriends.
No. Don't comfort Leo. Don't comfort my Leo. But she's also an extrovert. And this, I'm an extrovert, and I totally relate to her going to her introvert friend, if you want to think of Angel as an introvert, and be like, you came here and like, you didn't try to talk to anybody. And like, I was like that when I was younger too, because I didn't have as much empathy. I just didn't know better. Now
I'm still like that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, Cordelia, as truthful as she's being, she could definitely learn to be a little bit more understanding of why Angel, it's hard for Angel to reach out and be more open and have fun at a party. I get why they're doing this. That's Cordelia, right? That's who she is. And that's the joke that they're playing up here. But it just, I found that really relatable. If you're somebody who also was like young and liked to go to parties and was extroverted, and you're like, I wanted you to have fun and I want everyone to see you like as I see you, because she obviously has affection for Angel. And when they don't step up, like, she's just like, well, that's on you. Like, you're so mopey all night, you know? And I just found that really realistic.
I found this, I mean, I've been really hard on Cordelia so far, because I feel like she's just like rude a lot of the time. Like, tact is saying like true stuff, but also you have to like, there's a difference between saying true stuff and like just being mean. But I feel like she's come to a point, like her saying this to Angel didn't come off as mean whatsoever. Mm-hmm. It just came off as like, I'm just kind of calling out my friend. Like, this is my friend and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to put you on blast, Angel, because, you know, you can have fun. Like, it's okay. And I like that. Like, I didn't feel like she's starting to kind of change a little bit, where she kind of uses her words a little bit better, even if they are still a little bit harsh. It doesn't come off as mean, but that could also be that their friendship has gotten like closer. So now it feels like it's okay for her to be kind of mean, because I'm a little bit mean to my friends too. But that's sometimes.
I think there's also another reason that this conversation is even in here too, because like Angel says to her, I don't hate her, Laura. I've got two modes with people, bite and avoid, hard to shift. Plus, I can't get too close. And the script had an extra line that says, I mean with women. So this whole conversation feels very natural. And that's something that I love about both Buffy and Angel. They like, they have such a way of like bringing about a natural conversation, but also like moving forward the plot, or kind of talking about like the subtext and stuff. And it's helpful to frame this episode because Angel's comment that he can't get too close to women, and then later his comments to Tay about how he doesn't do well with Flame, and then him holding the ice bag while feeling alone at the party. I think they're setting up a comparison between Angel and Tay and the other men, and how Angel exhibits self-control unlike some of the other men when he's feeling aroused and stuff, even though he has almost, like, he should be like the horniest guy ever, because he's the one that at this point can't have sex. Like, we haven't talked about like the whole, you know, true love clause, I guess you could say. And so I think they're setting up a comparison between Angel and Jira, and they're trying to show like, hey, Angel can't get too close to women because of what's going to happen later on in this episode as well. So I think like it was a really clever way to have Cordelia address like what she obviously would address in a very Cordelia way, but also kind of like, hey, we're going to lead into this later on in the episode.
Speaking of women as sexual beings, I like how Cordelia phrases it, where she's like, well, maybe Laura would, right? And yeah. Like, this is this offhanded comment where, you know, she's clearly like she was always signaled as being more sexually active on Buffy. And we see that continued here, right? Where it's like, she's clearly very aware of what women her age are doing, especially in a city like LA, where she has these friends like Laura, where it's like, yeah, actually Laura is kind of like promiscuous in a good and empowered way, right? And I thought that was a nice way to acknowledge Cordelia's own kind of agency and her ability to talk about sex maturely.
Especially after expecting.
Oh yeah, that's true.
We also talked about the fact that like Cordelia wouldn't like linger on that, and she would kind of move forward from that traumatic experience very quickly just because she's that type of character. So that's a really good point also, like tying it back to last week's episode.
Cordelia shops her trauma away.
Retail therapy.
So Wesley enters the scene. Cordelia's like, he was cooler. And Angel's like, I'm depressed now. Wesley's like, well, I'm feeling rather chipper. Here's our extrovert over here who's completely like batteries charged from his time dancing at the party.
Yeah, he's invigorated. He's ready for the day.
I love that he had such a good time and like he doesn't care that he looks you know, silly. Like he didn't look silly. He was just having a good time. And I love that. Like if I saw Wesley at a party doing whatever he was doing, I would go and talk to him.
You know who we have to thank for this, right?
Who?
Giles.
Oh.
Giles unlocked Wesley's ability to dance. Remember in prom?
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
Wesley's deliberating. He wants to go dance. And then Giles is like, just for God's sake, man, just go dance, right?
Oh.
Like, he gave Wesley permission, and now Wesley can dance for as long as he wants.
Can't stop, won't stop.
Still has the emotional maturity of a blueberry scone, but, you know, he's moving on to shrimp puffs.
I like how Wesley's who Leia would go talk to. I would be Laura talking to Angel, trying to get him to come dance with me at the song I love. I wouldn't give up as quickly as her, though.
I know, right? And I don't think Laura honestly would have judged Angel if he had broken out and danced like that. I think that was clearly from his perspective.
His anxiety was telling him that, yeah.
Yep. So Wesley is looking for more food. Angel clues in. It's like, hey, you're broke. You're not eating enough. That's why you're so excited about food. Wesley's like, a man's finances are his own business, Angel. Angel offers him a job, and we all say collectively it's about flipping time because Wesley, he's been here for 4 episodes. He should have been a part of the gang, you know, immediately, but we understand they needed to give him time.
How many cases are they getting that they can afford to pay Wesley too?
Again, Leia,
I don't understand.
I think there's stuff that we're seeing off screen. Like, there's got to be other cases they're getting because there's no way.
Just like divorce cases and like
petty. Maybe Cordy's applying for government grants or something.
Yeah.
Small business loans.
Possible.
Not for profit.
Like I said, Angel's probably still selling his feet online, you know? So.
You think?
Cordy's getting mighty good with that computer. You know, she's got a long way. From the days of Buffy season 1, where it's like, what does DEL mean again? Deliver?
Yeah, right. And it, like, I think it was like episode 1 or 2, where she was like typing with her pointer fingers, like one at a time. Yeah.
Like a boomer.
Yeah, right. Yep. So Angel's all emotional. Cordelia's like, this is great. As long as I don't have to take a pay cut. Angel's like, no. She's like, we're a team. And Wesley immediately, like, you can tell this guy has trauma. He has trauma from being let go from the Watchers Council. And if, like, from what little we can piece together from his past, like, I think that was his whole life. And we know from Giles being a Watcher and talking about his past, like, it's something that it's like a family business. You're basically, like, raised from a young age to be like, this is what you're going to become. This is who you're going to become. And I think Wesley is kind of having a little bit of an identity crisis here, having been let go and trying to find a place where he fits, he belongs. And so I think, I don't know, I just felt really like happy for him, but also a little sad as he's kind of tearing up because he's like, someone wants me. Someone thinks I'm useful.
Sweet Wesley in his little knitted sweater.
So precious. I just want to give him a hug.
No.
So Cordelia has a vision. Wesley's all excited to have like his first time on the job. And he brings his, what is it, Bavarian fighting axe with him. The one that got stuck in the wall the episode
that
before.
He doesn't even know how to use properly.
So we get to the ice factory and Angel is staying in the shadows, kind of moseying through. He's looking at the burnout carcass. He's looking at the coffin-sized shipping crates that Pete opened. It sees the ice. And as he's investigating, there's a shadow that slips behind him. Again, these really cool shots behind Angel's frame as we're like going through, seeing things from his perspective. The music is very 90s noir, very detective. It's very different than what we've heard the past few episodes, and I really like it.
I was kind of getting like Buffy season 1 music vibes in some of the scenes.
Oh, with the piano, like the really low bass piano. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just very like reminiscent of that for me.
It also was very Fifth Element. There was a lot of Fifth Element nods with not Jira, the other girl, Shari, I think is her name. And then the way they were dressed, even the script kind of references it. But even some of the music is slightly reminiscent of that as well. That and what's the Harrison Ford movie that with like the robots? I can't remember what it's called.
Star Wars?
Indiana Jones?
I know. It's the one that okay, they just did the remake with Ana de Armas and guy from The Notebook. No one's seen it? Okay, never mind. Someone out there knows what I'm talking about.
Air Force One.
No.
Wait, I saw that movie, but I don't remember the name.
What is
Ana de Armas and Ryan Gosling?
Harrison Ford robot movie.
Oh, isn't it called like I know what you're talking about.
Blade yes. Runner.
Yes.
How did I forget yes. that? Apologies, everyone. I apologize for not knowing everything. Once again, I have let you all down. How dare I?
Get out of here, Sarah.
I know. All right. I will take myself out.
We love Harrison Ford over here. what an actor of his generation.
All right. So Angel finds Tay, Captain Inferno, who looks like Kiefer Sutherland. He's like, I don't do well near an open flame. He looks down, sees that the guy's forearm is burnt, thinking that we have another player in town. And then they have this whole conversation where Tay's like, hey, I'm not from your dimension, which we're all like, this is new. This opens up the lore. This opens up the whole world yeah. in like a way that we've never experienced on Buffy.
Are you comparing him to Kiefer Sutherland or is the script?
Oh, I am. I think you are. Like Kiefer Sutherland.
Also Canadian.
Yeah, also Canadian. I thought he looked more like Matt Damon. Matt Damon. But I was watching this. Does anyone know that reference? Is it my alone?
No.
No one knows it? Okay. Well, someone out there is going to know what I'm referring to. Team America is what I'm referring to. But when I was watching this episode, I was watching it with my husband, and I don't usually watch episodes with him because he makes stupid comments like this one, but he was watching it and he was like, what are those, white Klingons? And I was like, no! Are you not listening?
He's like, no, I'm not, obviously, Steph.
You're like, that's it, you lose your episode privileges right? once again.
Because he's on his phone the whole time, and then he glances up and he makes a comment like that, and then he goes back to his phone.
I knew there was a reason you hadn't invited him on the podcast.
Oh, those are white Klingons. I know. I've seen this episode. I was like, no, you haven't. It's not Star Trek.
He's like, what are we watching this again? That's hilarious. There was also a guy later on that was like, I think had either Cordelia or Wesley that looked like, I can't talk today. Who's the guy that played,
Harrison Ford.
Christian Bale. He looked like Christian Bale.
No, who looks like Christian Bale? Point him out to me.
Okay. I'll send you a screenshot afterwards. It's the guy that holds Cordelia at bay when Jira and Angel are talking to Tay at the very end of the episode. Looks like Christian Bale. I swear. I even like.
How did you guys notice what any of these like aliens looked like? I was not paying attention to what they looked like whatsoever. Leia,
if there's a man on screen, we're gonna check him out.
Angel.
I was gonna say it's because Leia's so zeroed in on Angel, she can't see any other man.
I really am. I follow his every move. I'm just like,
All right, so we get Tay's perspective. He says, I was sent by my people to stop it. Never says what it is. He says, the bringer of chaos. More than a demon, it's a vessel of pure rage. Yeah, feminine rage. It has almost destroyed my world, and now it is loose in yours. Angel says, how can I kill it? He says, you won't be able to. It's stronger than one man. They part ways. The script says Tay walks out into the bright sun where Angel cannot follow. So they keep making like pointed references to
sure,
Angel's
rub it in, scripts. What did Angel do to you?
Wow.
Typical man, you know, framing a woman disagreeing with his oppressive practices as she's going to destroy everything.
The world as we know it will end.
I mean, it might good. Honestly, though.
Like, honestly, good, might. Though.
She wouldn't make me a sad witch.
She has to be destroyed.
So then in Angel's office, they are kind of doing some reconvening. He says his name was Tay. He seems pretty shook up. Wesley's like, okay, let's do some research, figure out what demon it is. Cordelia.
Yes, let's look up Tay. Great lead. Look up White Klingons while you're at it.
Good thing I just picked up the Book of Tay.
So I mean, if we're going to alphabetical, right, he's probably located next to Toth.
Toth!
All these one-named demons.
So Angel tasks Wes and Cordy with checking to see if there are any more burn victims while he goes to check out Wilker's office to see who hired him. Okay, I love this scene. I adore this scene. I am just a sucker for whenever Angel pulls out gadgets, whenever we have more of the Detective Norm music and like Angel scaling walls and doing what detectives do, becoming a Nancy Drew. It's just
parkour, so parkour.
The way he just like climbed up that building.
I didn't realize... I forgot he did stuff like this because we haven't been watching Angel. So he pulls out these like guns, these like, what are they, scaffolding? I don't know what you would call them. He's like, pew, pew.
Grappling guns.
Yeah. And I was like, what?
You
in
don't
the
think
world?
That's how he got up to Buffy's window?
No, I think it's blue. But we know he's played like in Buffy season 3, he was playing with the grappling hooks and stuff when they were breaking into the mayor's office. And even then, Kara and I were like, where's he getting the stuff? Like, what is he? Where's he finding these tools and gadgets?
He has so many gadgets in LA. Like, every episode, there's a different gadget. And it's like, but you can do it without Angel. Like, he literally climbed up a whole building on like a, what do you call it? Like a pipe. It was like a pipe that drains water. He was just like, yeah.
Yeah.
Perhaps a drain pipe.
Yes, a drain pipe.
Some might call it that.
That's the one. I was like, the pipe where the water drains.
Yeah. I'm so glad somebody can talk today. This is honestly very refreshing. Kara, come on more often. This is great.
But I liked, I agree with you, Sarah. That was cool. I liked this long coat, very Batman, very, very fun watching him do his detective stuff.
It's hot.
It was really cool. It was very hot. Yeah. It's cool. It's hot. It's, she's all temperatures, to quote our favorite character over on Buffy, Forrest.
No. I just forgot about him.
Somewhere out there, Leah is screaming in rage. She hates Forrest. Okay, but what I will say is this episode really does draw out the suspense and play up the reveal. It's about like a third into the episode before Jira even shows up. Like, it really feels like they're building up to this like huge, massive reveal. And then she shows up and like, for real, she like definitely, you're like, whoa, okay, this is amazing. Like, she's someone we've never seen before. She's very interesting. But it just, again, it's another just bummer and a letdown because the episode doesn't quite deliver what it feels like it's leading up to. The script is very interesting, though. So when Jira is introduced, it says, we push in to see that his attacker is not an it at all, but a rather beautiful, exotic woman dressed halfway between high royalty and classy kick-ass. So once again, it feels like just a perpetuation of a stereotype, the fact that they have to add in. Yeah. Anyway. But real fast, I want to talk about Byling because I looked her up briefly and she just sounds like the most interesting woman ever. She is in more recent years is probably more well known for having just some amazing and really out there fashion statement pieces on the red carpet and in other award shows. But Byling, she's born in the city of Chengdu in southern China. Byling began her career at age of 14. She enlisted in the Chinese People's Liberation Army, where she spent 3 years in a performance troupe entertaining soldiers stationed in Tibet. And she had a bout of depression, which sent her to a mental hospital. But she came out recently and said that she actually, during her time in Tibet, and her and other female performers were regularly plied with alcohol and sexually abused by older male officers, including one instance of rape that led to a pregnancy that she aborted. And this all happened before the age of 18. So she ended up having to go to a mental hospital, and all of that kind of inspired her to become an actress. And so I can't help but wonder if this particular role was maybe something that hit a little bit close to home for her and was something that, you know, she felt was important enough for her to take because she's been in some really, really big stuff. She's in a lead role opposite Richard Gere in John Abnett's Red Corner. She received numerous accolades, including the prestigious Breakthrough Performance Award from the National Board of Review. She got the Discovery Star awarded by the Hollywood Women's Press Club for their Golden Apple Awards. The film was actually critical of human rights abuse in China. And as a result, her Chinese citizenship was revoked. And then she became a U.S. citizen after that. So this sounds like an incredibly fierce woman. All right. So the script says she has impossibly bright blue eyes, otherworldly ridges down her cheeks, a ring or a couple of studs in one of the ridges. Her name is Jira. So Jira's like, what are you doing here? He's like, hey, I could ask you the same question. She assumes that he's working with Tay. And he's like, I work for myself. I'm just looking for his killer. And then he's like, hey, I think you're the one that burned him alive, because he's noticing his burned jacket or his burned forearm. And then we have this like incredibly fast fight.
What I will say is I found the startup of this episode, the first quarter of it, kind of boring. By the time they had to go, like, you know, explore this freezer murder and then chatter, chatter, and then he's here, until she showed up, you know, half, like a quarter of the way through, it was starting to lose me a little bit this episode. Mm-hmm. And then when she showed up, I was like, oh, okay, here we go. Mm-hmm. But you don't want your episodes to do that. You want it to continue building the tension. But I was like, I don't really care until she showed up. Here we go. Something's happening.
Then we have this really, really odd sequence where Angel decides to call them and he's trying to get his phone to work. He's like opening his glove compartment, plugging it in. And every review that I read, everything that I saw, everyone was like, why? Why did we have this be so long? For what? Like,
it was
what was going
very,
on here?
Very, very long. It was funny, but it was unnecessarily long. And it just kept going and going and going. Hilarious. I laughed. I laughed a lot.
I mean, I love Angel, so I will watch it. But I believe that they added this to relate to the next scene where Angel is talking about Baudelaire, which I have things to say about Baudelaire and the painting. But Baudelaire often wrote about loss and change of beauty in the rapidly changing industrial age of Paris in the mid-19th century. So I think they are trying to continuously show how Angel is struggling to keep up with technology in the times that he's living in. Just like another example of like why he needs Cordelia and Wesley. So I think this shot was to kind of show that, but again, kind of long and kind of unnecessary, honestly. Mm-hmm. So they have a conversation. Angel's multitasking skills are elite, I gotta say. The fact that he's able to search for this cord, have a conversation with Cordelia, and keep his train of thought while also tailing this woman, I don't know how he does it.
Also, Jira is very skilled at driving for somebody from another dimension.
That is true.
We don't know if her other dimension has cars or not. It could.
So Angel and Cordelia have this conversation back and forth where they swap information. Angel lets it slip that he finds her kind of attractive. And they decide to cross-reference and try and find all they can about the demon Tay. Angel kind of suspects that Tay is not giving him all the information that he needs to. And then we get to the art museum, because of course it's an art museum. So Jira is actually incredibly smart. She finds a security guard and says, hey, there's a man with a long black coat. He's the one that is following me. Angel somehow knows that those security guards are following his black coat, takes it off, and then turns into a art connoisseur. And we have this okay, this episode is not great, but it has some amazing, amazing scenes. And this is one of them. I adored it.
Angel's improv skills, back at it again. Another so Oscar good. For Angel. He's know, just so good. Again. Like, who would have thought that Angel would be so great at just like on the spot, just coming up with a story, going with it.
That's Leia's Yelp review for his tour guide. Yeah. For yes. Angel's tour. Company.
Well, I mean, it helps that it's an art gallery too. Like, this is like his thing.
Yeah, he's an artiste. Of course, yeah, I mean, he would know. Of course,
he also did it in the optometrist office, and he did it to Faith, and he does it every day. He's just a good actor. Just saying.
Okay, so I want to talk about Baudelaire real fast. So I was like looking up, because I was like, okay, so we have like the whole bit about the vampire, like supposedly he wrote it about Angel, which I thought was a fun little moment. So Baudelaire, and this is from Cliff Notes because, you know, I'm not an art connoisseur or a poet at all, but it says Baudelaire often spoke of love as the traditionally artistic attempt to escape boredom, yet he never had a successful relationship. And as a result, the speaker attributes much of his spleen, because he wrote a poem about a spleen, his spleen at one point, to images of women such as Lady Macbeth and Persephone, cruel and murderous women such as the monstrous female vampire in The Vampire. He compares them to a dagger that slices the speaker's heart. And so a lot of Baudelaire's poetry and a lot of the stuff that he talks about is very rooted in misogyny, as he kind of like battles with his flesh, and he really struggles with how tempting and alluring women are, and how he kind of like blames them a lot of the time, but at the same time, he feels a lot of guilt. And so there's like a lot of like back and forth. And so it's just really interesting that you would have that in this episode, and then Angel's talking about the painting and Baudelaire and all that stuff. So it feels like the writers did a ton of research for a ton of little details with things like this, but then didn't put as much thought into a lot of the other stuff in the episode. And so it feels like such a missed opportunity, and it makes me
okay,
mad.
Just a side note, that sounds like William the Bloody. William the Bloody Awful Poet. That sounds like Spike's backstory.
So are we headcanoning?
Am
that
I wrong?
Spike was really Baudelaire, and he wrote this poetry about Angelus.
I believe that.
Honestly, yeah.
This ties in perfectly with Fool for Love.
Yeah.
That's hilarious, Leia. No, but I thought that was an interesting backstory on kind of like a little throwaway line. Just kind of, again, going in the theme of this episode of like men can't control themselves because women are just so – they're too tempting. They're too alluring, and it's their fault and it's not our fault. And so anyway. All right. So Angel finishes his tour guide bit while Wesley and Cordelia figure out that they are looking for the vagaries of Odin Tal. And they talk about how they are from a different dimension and they are herbivores and they consume a lot of compost. So Jira ends up opening her portal, or was about to open her portal, and Angel confronts her and he reveals that he's a vampire. And then she says, I don't have time to tell you about everything about Tay. And he's like, hey, I'm on your side. I'm here to help you. And she's like, well, I don't need you to help me. And he's like,
too bad.
I'll help you.
I don't care.
So then the portal opens and a girl falls through, Shari. Then we have Tay enter in. And then we're like, oh, shocker, Tay is the bad guy. Yeah. Okay. So one of the biggest things that I was thinking about with this episode is, and I think it was you, Steph. Yeah, you, Steph, you mentioned it earlier. I kind of wish that we would have been able to see Jira do more apart from Angel. And I know Angel is sent by the powers that be to go rescue her and stuff, but I feel like in this moment, Jira has displayed that she is very powerful and very capable. And I was a little, I felt like the episode intentionally held back from allowing her to go all out with Tay. And I don't know, I was just a little bummed by that in this moment.
Yeah. That's what I was alluding to earlier. I was like, it's too bad we don't get to see her unleash everything. Obviously, it has to always come back to Angel. He's the hero. He's the person who's supposed to save her. But I think if Jira had this problem, the storyline on Buffy, it would have been a very different outcome. more of a female team up, perhaps. More
yeah,
satisfying.
Yeah, that's a really
maybe.
Good point.
It's not the show's fault for that. I mean, it's Angel's show. They're trying to tell a story through this. And again,
but
I think we already gave them kudos
the right
for that. Yeah, well, I mean, again, like I said, it falls flat because you're like, it's right there. It's right there to have this empowering woman save her, her sisters and the people in her culture. But that big, handsome vampire just has to be there too.
Yeah. Oh, and that leads me to like a question. So, and I mean, maybe this is straying too far from the episode and stuff, but this is something that I have like wrestled back and forth with, and Tabby and Leah and I have talked about, and Leah slightly, is in your guys' opinion, is it better for an episode like this to try to touch on this as a conversation opener, even if it doesn't do it well, because it's at least out there? Or is it better for just not to touch material like this at all, knowing that like, hey, maybe this isn't the best show for that? I know that's like a loaded question. Sorry.
I don't know.
I don't know. Okay. That's fair. Yeah.
That's tough.
And that's something I go back and forth with, because it's like, okay, if it's done problematically, is that actually making the problem worse? Or is that opening a conversation up to people who've never considered that as even a possibility? I don't know. And go back and forth with that.
I want my shows to swing big, but can any show from this era do that well?
Yeah. I was going to say, that, you know,
the year in which it comes out really does matter. It's like Cara say, like we want the attempt is acknowledged.
But when
it doesn't hit home, you sit there back and you're just wondering, what was the point?
Yeah.
So
it would be interesting to like think about what people in, when was this aired in 1999?
It was 2000.
2000. Okay. So it would be interesting to like go back and see what people were saying at the time. Like what was the reaction to this at the time? Because I feel like the Buffyverse as a whole was doing things at the time, you know, in 1997 to like however till 2003 that like other shows weren't doing on TV. But in today's world, like we're watching it today and it's just kind of like, that's cool, but like it's not really done too well. But it would be interesting to like look back on it from that time. And I don't know, it's a really hard question to like answer. Like, is it a good idea? Is it not? Like, does it open the conversation? I don't know.
So then we have this moment with Jira and Angel in Angel's apartment because, you know, Angel has to take back the poor damsel in distress back to his place. Gotta bandage him up.
Angel wants everybody who could possibly be a threat to know where he lives.
And
Kara, I felt really bad. I was like, man, I have to apologize to her, because I was like, there is so much sexual tension in this episode. I was
what
like,
a burden to carry.
But
I didn't notice any of it, so I'm fine.
Okay, great.
Talk about it at all, right?
What a great conversation.
Kara's like, they are just
two friends.
They are great friends.
Two friends having a convo.
Oh, man. All right, but they are like getting closer and closer. And Angel, okay, Angel is real upfront about this curse. Like, there are some people, like, what was the episode we did? Oh, Somnambulist. He doesn't tell Jeremy Renner, I don't remember, or Kate.
Oh, yeah,
he doesn't tell Kate or Jeremy Renner about his curse. He doesn't tell most anybody, but he just comes right on out and is like, well, I was changed by a gypsy curse. So Jira kind of fills in the backstory, says that we are being oppressed. We have this thing called the Co on our spine, and it tells other people basically when we're aroused, and it can cause other people to be aroused, especially when they come of age and their power is first showing itself. But when it's removed, they are more easily controlled. And so then throughout this entire conversation, they're just getting closer and closer. The camera's doing like this spinny thing. We're just feeling the heat, feeling the tension. And I'm not going to lie, like, I'm kind of a fan. I thought it was kind of hot.
I was into
it. It was hot. It was hot.
It was so hot.
It was
hot.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved it. I was like, you know, it's nice to see Angel getting close to a woman. But the fact that the woman's Chinese, I was like, all my dreams are coming true. Like, they're going to get together. Jira's going to get pregnant. They're going to have a little Steph, a little half baby. And it's going to be great.
Steph's just screen capping the scene of the two of them standing close together. And then she's cutting out a photo of her head and pasting it on.
There you go. There you go. That's going to be our promo for this episode.
Please. Don't let me do it. My Photoshop skills are no good. But because I was watching this with my husband, he was like, oh, I see why you picked this episode. He's like, another Asian woman with another white man. Typical, typical. But
He knows that Angel is like your one, right?
Yeah, of course he knows. That's why he was like, oh, I see how it is.
My favorite part is that they have a little Steph. That's, I think, my favorite part.
little half babies. And I think also the fact that she's talking about this fin on the back of her neck, like that goes down her back and it lights red. And I, my joke would just be that she wasn't supposed to reveal that that's all Asian women. We all have that fin. And mine glows red whenever I would see Angel on screen. And Kara would be like, what is that? I'd be like, oh, just a strobe light I put in my room. Don't worry about it. Ignore it.
Steph, you're just revealing all the secrets today.
She revealed it. I'm now saying it's not just women of this culture. It's also all Chinese women.
Kara's like, I don't want to know about any of this.
I want no part in this.
I just find it very fascinating because, you know, I'm watching this scene and I understand that that's what's going on, right? There's this tension between the two of them. I'm just not experiencing it the same way all of you apparently are.
You're not moved.
I'm just watching it. I'm just like, okay.
The little Asian spice of this scene is like the cherry on top of the cake for me. It is sexy overall, but we know Angel spent time in China, right? That's where he learned Tai Chi. But like the fact that it's like, it's proof here. He's into it. I love it.
Ayo, you have a chance after all, Steph.
I mean, I've always had a chance, but now it's like, now I know that, you know, his tastes run Asian.
I mean, canonically, right? 2022, Angel's alive and he'd be looking just as good as he does now. Like,
yeah.
He's out there somewhere, Steph. Go get your man.
It's not too late for me.
And I mean, okay, this is just, you know, we all know this, but this is a PSA for any men that are listening to the podcast. Because listen, if you have a wife that loves Angel, like, you have to come to terms with the fact that there are three of you in this relationship. It's you, your wife, and Angel. Like, that's just how it is. And
deal with it.
Those men have to deal with it, you know?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, for most of them, they come into the relationship not knowing that is part of the deal. We wait till we snatch them up and, you know, have captured them. Then we're like, haha, let me unleash my crazy.
Yeah, that's also why we insist on recapping and rewatching the show alone. This is my time. I don't need you here. I get 45 minutes alone with this man.
You know what I think is really interesting about the way the scene is shot? It's like spinning, the camera's spinning around them, but it never, for like a while, it doesn't show us her fin. So this whole time, they're like getting closer. She's telling him all about what happens with the fin and like what it represents and all that. And then you can tell, like, oh my God, like, what is happening here? It's just the anticipation is like crazy. And then they zoom around and you see it glowing and it's like vibrating and stuff. And it's just very, like, it's just a very sexual scene. And
Did they show her fin in this scene? Because I felt like I feel like I was watching for it and I didn't see it. I know they showed it at the very end, but I couldn't remember if they showed it in this scene or not.
When she walks away.
They do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. But they're doing like the whole spinning thing the whole time. So it's almost like you're getting like dizzy with like, I don't know,
anticipation.
Sexual tension. Yeah. And then there's sorry. And then you see that it's like glowing and stuff and it's just very.
Oh, you're right.
You
know. She walks away, but Angel doesn't see it. Angel doesn't see it till the very end. We see it. And so it's kind of like this, oh, okay, we're not imagining things. Like, she's actually experiencing this too. Cause we can tell Angel's hot and bothered. Like, that's obvious.
We only show our fins when we choose. That's when we bring them out. Yeah.
Serious question here.
Oh, okay. Okay, bring us back down. Whew, we're here. It's getting hot in here.
No, sorry. This is about sexual tension.
Oh, no. Okay.
How do you tell? For people who don't have fins, how do you tell?
If they're aroused?
Yes.
Yeah.
If there's
eye contact?
Yes.
I don't know. How do non-Chinese people tell? I have my fin, so.
Like reduced vocabulary, heavy breathing.
Like husky voice.
Yeah, husky voice.
They're close. They're very close to each other, right? Like they're
a lot of like, there is direct eye contact, but there's a lot of looking at their lips. They're looking at each other's lips.
Yes.
Like you can tell, like there's a subconscious like desire to kiss. I mean, Kara, you started this. Like, here we go. Like,
I'm curious, right? Because it's like, like when you're looking at somebody else, how do you know that they're feeling aroused or attracted to you? I'm just very curious about that, since most people don't have fins to tell you you know, are there other signals that you're looking for?
Your pupils dilate. When you're looking at someone attractive, when you're aroused, your pupils get larger. Yeah, you can feel it.
It's just chemistry.
Like, it's chemistry.
Yeah. Your blood boils in certain ways.
That wasn't.
Oh, no, it is. I promise you it is.
That's what the scene felt like, too. It was like blood boil. Like, it literally felt
like steamy.
There was this, there was this anticipation.
Something
and
was
like,
rippling in the air.
Reaching like a climax of some sort, like
well, you get to the point
like
two.
It's edging or edging,
yeah.
Or you get to the point two where you're like, oh, it's on. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's not on because she walked away, but like, that's the feeling. That's what it's building up toward.
Yes,
I do find it quite hilarious that like this species or whatever they are in this reality, the men have it right there. They know when a woman is turned on. Mm-hmm. It's flashing in their face and they're like, remove it. Like, we don't want to know. We'd rather guess and be in the dark about it. Like, come on.
But so that's the whole point to get back to female genital mutilation, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, I got to break the mood down. That's the whole point is the idea is that, in many cultures, even in a lot of Western cultures, it's just practiced differently. You know, women are not supposed to be sexual beings, right? They're not supposed to be sex subjects. They're just supposed to be sex objects. They are things that sex happens to in order for men to experience pleasure and, you know, create heirs. And so, the idea that you could see that a woman is physically aroused and enjoying, you know, the tension of a situation, it would be offensive to those kinds of men because they don't even want to admit that these women have those feelings, because then that would imply that they owe them personhood and agency and pleasure, when really they're just there to serve the men's pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
And letting them keep their fin, right? They have control over that sexuality. And it just makes them feel inferior because they're like, well, we don't have control of overall.
Right, because if somebody has to feel aroused and ready, that means you have to make them that way, right? Like, you have to put the work in the foreplay to get them ready.
To get them ready.
If you remove that fin, if you remove that fin, right, the idea is that, you know, it, the way that they put it, right, is ready for sex whenever the man wants it. And he doesn't have to put in any of that work of getting her aroused, you know, getting her wanting sex, receptive to sex. He doesn't have to do anything. You know, the women are just at his disposal. He doesn't have to acknowledge their agency. So you're absolutely right.
So you're saying that men do know where the clitoris is. That's my takeaway.
Well, I think, again, one of the perhaps inaccurate parts of this in terms of an allegory for FGM, in most societies that practice FGM, it is older women who end up doing the actual cutting. It's a practice perpetuated by older women, who are, you know, they are ultimately upholding patriarchy, right? But men don't have anything to do with it. Usually men and boys have their own kind of masculinity rituals that they go through. But this is a ritual that is for women and girls. So I can't verify that, Sarah. I don't think that's true in this case.
Right.
Nothing's proven. Yeah. Another thing I thought about when I was watching this scene, or just in general of this episode, is Angel being like the specimen that Angel is, that he has the urge, but he chooses to take a cold shower instead. And I think that's another comparison there. Well, I mean, obviously these white Klingons are bad guys and they're one dimensional bad guys. So compared to our hero Angel, of course he's going to fight the urge that this sexy woman is coming on to him and he's attracted to her, but he's not going to do anything about it. He's here to save her because he's a hero. But I just found that idea around Angel as a character being better
than
other men.
What do we think Wesley does later in the episode?
Yeah. Well, Wesley is Wesley.
I thought that too, Steph. I think that once again speaks to the admirable self-control that Angel has. And I mean, would we expect anything different? No, because I mean, this is a guy who has exhibited self-control and in every aspect of his life up until now, with holding back Angelus, you know, on a in a consistent basis.
I'm going to ask a question that I don't. Oh, no. I think I'm going to ask you this.
Oh, no. Ask it.
Do all of you think, like, do you think Angel masturbates?
Yeah, absolutely. Duh.
Yeah.
He does in this episode, Cara, in this very episode.
Literally.
That's what he goes to do for a cold shower so he can jerk off.
He does that in the shower. Yeah. I thought he was taking the shower because he didn't have time to masturbate.
No, that's when you do it. That's when guys go to the showers, quick jobs, cleaner. Right? Mm-hmm. So yes, Cara, the answer to your question is absolutely he masturbates.
Yes.
Next question. I'm dying. That's so funny.
I never let Steph talk about this on our podcast. So.
Yeah, 100%. He does. Well, at least he did in this episode. Yeah, 100%.
Well, that was my question. Is like when he's not under the influence of an alien sex goddess, like
I think he does.
You know,
I think
do you think just on the regular, he's just like, I'm feeling really horny. I got to go rub one out before.
Let's think about the year that he was in Sunnydale and him and Buffy were around each other, but they couldn't do anything. Like after the movie, for example, in Enemies, after they went to see that sexy movie. It's more likely that Angel went home and like masturbated than not, in my opinion.
And that's I think after he does it, he feels super guilty about it. He's like, oh no, I'm so vile. I'm a monster.
I mean, he was presumably probably not a very good one, but he was presumably born Catholic. So yeah.
Yeah. He's like, I'm filthy. Just bad
Angel. Angel has a lot of Catholic guilt. So much. I mean, wait, that's a spoiler, but we'll get there in the next episode, actually.
All right, so because he can't work off all that sexual tension, then
have an episode to recap.
I know, sorry. Like, bring us back down.
Thanks for bringing us on.
I know, sorry. I have to cut this tension with the rest of the recap. So because Angel and Jira both have all this sexual tension, we have that moment where they start to argue. And you can tell it's a lot of frustration, not just because they kind of have differing ways that they want to go about this. He's like, hey, if you guys are incinerating guys, I'm here to protect people of this world. And she's like, I don't care about humans. I'm here to protect my girls. They kind of butt heads. And yeah, that's inevitable. But it also kind of feels like we can't bone right now. So we're going to just argue because we have to let it out somehow. And it honestly reminded me a little bit of Buffy and Angel because that's what they do a lot of the time.
That's how you deal with frustration.
You just yell at someone. All right. So then we're back up with Cordelia and Wesley. And, like, it's so funny how we go from this intensely sexual scene to they're at a compost area. So it's like, meanwhile, with Wesley and Cordelia looking for compost, which is like the opposite end of the spectrum over here. Cordelia's like, I'm not sure we should be out here. We should have waited for Angel. And Wesley's like doing the most. He's like, as Angel's newest officially employed, employee, I feel it's doubly important to show initiative and drive. And then he's like, ooh, look, Nancy's petticoat. He's like gushing all over the flowers. That's me. Wesley's my dream man.
I was going to say, that's totally you, Sarah. I was like, yeah. Sarah's going to know you, what Wesley. Flower that is or plants.
Well, I'm glad that you agree that Leia can have Angel and Sarah can have Wesley.
Yes, it all works out. There you go. All right, so they figure out, hey, we actually did find the right people. They end up going inside the warehouse. They see Tay. They see, unfortunately, the very subservient Shari there. And they're talking about like how they need to find Jira and clues Wesley and Cordelia in. And then we go to this random, it looks like this spa that's in Palm Springs, California. And we see none other than Kirk from Gilmore Girls, Sean Gunn, brother to James Gunn.
Oh, that's who he is. I was like, this guy looks familiar. I couldn't place him.
It's Kirk.
Yep. Which, depending upon your feelings about Warner Brothers and the DC Universe right now, Sean and James Gunn are either, you know, on your list of mortal enemies or he's your savior. Because with the whole, like, how he's going to kind of take over the DC Universe. Does anybody know about that? Is it just me? Okay. Showing my nerd right now. Never mind. Moving on. So Kirk from Gilmore Girls, but his name is Mars in this episode. He's like, and namaste to you. Also, I do want to point out, like the Buffyverse is infamous for reusing their characters. And Sean Gunn played a previous character in Hero. He was the guy that was the cousin to Doyle who ends up dying in the flashback. So I thought it was interesting that they brought him back for this episode as well. So he brings Jira into this room, a spa-like room where there's a bunch of girls on ice. And Jira's like, hey, we need to go now. We need to move them somewhere safer. Mars says that he has someone that another shaman in the desert, a place that they can go. So he leaves to go call. Wesley and Cordelia are still at the compost room and they're like, hey, we need to get out. We need to tell Angel that we found the guys that he's looking for. And it sounds like he's going to go after Jira. So then they race back to Angel's house. Angel is fresh out of the shower. Oh, look, he actually got to finish his shower this time, Leia. How wonderful for him.
He finished in that shower, right?
Oh, man, I set you up for that one. My apologies, dear listeners and Kara.
It's nothing she hasn't heard before.
You all knew what you were getting into, you know.
A shirtless Angel.
I got it just for you, Steph.
Thank you.
You think that he listened to music while he was in the shower? Because last time he was listening to Beethoven.
Yeah.
Do you think he was like too distracted?
No, I think he needs like quiet and like just he needs to focus in this shower.
I think he played his favorite Shanghai album from China that he picked up last time he was there.
So Cordelia is mad at him. She's like, oh my gosh, you're taking a bath and a shower. Well, we nearly got burned from the inside out. And Angel's like, okay, Cordelia. He's like, I had to take a shower. What's up? So Cordelia and Wesley fill him in on what's going on. Angel's like, all right, we got to find Jira. I think I know where she is. He pulls out the shipping order that he found from the security guard's office. They grab some weapons. And they head on over there. At the spa, Mars is all like, welcome, bro. Namaste. And Angel's like, okay, I need to see Jira. None of this. And he's like, sorry, no can do, no Jira here. And there's a whole bunch of lines that are cut out of the script. It's hilarious. He's like, first, let's talk about the clothes vibe. When you're spiritually constipated, gotta lose the black. Energy can't move through black. Try yellow, something with flow. Also, you need to spend a little more time with the sun, bro. So unfortunately, that was cut out because it was hilarious. Angel doesn't have time for this crap. He pushes past. He finds Jira in the spa room, and he's like, hey, we got to go now. And she's like, yeah, we're going to leave in the morning, which, you know, anytime that anybody's being pursued in a lot of these fantasy shows, it's like, we'll leave in the morning, guys. Let's get a good night's sleep. No, they're coming right now.
Pack everything up, happens at night, like everything.
Conveniently for the vampire show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. Wouldn't it be better if Tay and his guys attacked the next? Well, I guess they didn't expect that Angel was going to be there, huh?
Do they know he's a vampire?
They also don't
though?
Know that Angel's a vampire.
Yeah.
Because Angel surprises them at the end.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's a thing that I caught. So Jira, I hope I'm saying her name right.
Yeah.
Jira. She says that Angel is a vampire. She tells Angel, you're a vampire. But then when the other, like, the boys come.
Angel reveals that he's a vampire to her because she's surprised that he's not completely knocked out for like hours and hours.
I missed a line.
You did because you were staring at Angel.
Okay.
Well. Yeah.
Leia's like, that's a fair cop.
Thinking about the shower.
Yeah. I was like, wait, how did she know he was a vampire, but they didn't? But I guess
he told her.
Yeah, he told her. Okay. So I completely missed a whole.
They didn't ask.
Line of dialogue.
You didn't ask. Don't. That's. You can't just ask someone if they're a vampire, Kara.
All right. So Wesley and Cordelia are trying to get the girls out of the tub, and Wesley is immediately affected by the girls. And
is he though, or is that just Wesley?
Yeah. The script says he is, but honestly, he's still very respectful. He could have been a lot worse.
I think we were meant to think he was affected because it did the little vibration thing. There was like a little.
I'm just saying, how can you tell with Wesley? Like,
yeah.
They're young. Borrow a word from Puppet Show, nubile women.
No. Why does that word keep? I hate that word, nubile.
Me too. You and me both, Sarah.
Said with that, guys, it's just an instant ick for me.
My question is, she said earlier that when they hit puberty, they have to like go on ice until they're done the puberty and then they can be themselves.
The puberty?
what age? These women look 27. You know, they're mature women. So when are they going into puberty, right?
I thought it was something about the interdimensional transportation that was causing it for them.
Okay, so it's like triggering it in them?
You know, I thought it was that Jira was freeing women who had recently gone through puberty and was bringing them back to put them on ice. Because she couldn't, if they were any older, they would have been clipped. So she couldn't bring them. So these have to be...
When Jira came here, right, she's telling Angel, she's like, you know, for the first couple of months, it was like so painful to be here in this mm-hmm. world. And I was so hot all the time. So I think it was something also about like the portal travel that kind of like agitated them.
That okay. could be.
But like notice like, again, they're older, right? So I mean, the species obviously goes through puberty when they're.
Yeah. Which is
not conveniently,
you know. Of an age that we can all be okay with.
Yeah, and for like Wesley to hit on them, it's okay. They're 30.
Which is interesting because the script clearly says that the girls are younger than Jira. They're supposed to be younger than Jira. Obviously didn't translate over to the screen where maybe they were like, this seems a little weird. Wesley's now having a common pattern of hitting on younger women. Maybe we need to make them older. I don't know.
They're like Cordelia age, right? She's supposed to be 19, but like she's 30. You know, she's an adult. You know.
Yeah.
Just curious.
All right. So the Tay and his boys show up. Mars goes to try to stall them, ends up getting punched and knocked out. And then we have Cordelia and Wesley loading more girls on as Angel and Jira take on the five guys together. They're doing fairly well until... Wesley and Cordelia decide to come back in and join the fight. And that seems to be where like the fight kind of switches. And you have Christian Bale holding Cordelia. and I mean, I guess it's fair. Cordelia and Wesley do jump into fights and try to help out. But it felt like they popped in and instantly were taken hostage. And I was like, guys, just keep loading for the girls. Plot. Come on. I know it's for the plot. So then we have another continuation of Jira's kind of what she told Angel earlier. And she's like, hey, like, I don't care about humans dying. I only care about the girls. She's very consistent. And we have that beat where it's like, okay, is she going to change her mind? And she goes, no, then they die. And she takes off. In the script, it says that Angel and Wesley make eye contact. And that's and then Angel nods. And then he's supposed to actually free Cordelia. But they made the choice in the episode to actually have Cordelia elbow the guy first and be the one that starts Wesley. So I'm all for that change.
I think
that
was
an excellent choice. Wesley is actually getting better and better at fighting. I want to just give him his props because he is a complete dweeb in all other areas of life and he needs any sort of points that we can give him. So well done, Wesley.
So clumsy, but he didn't fall. I think he only fell once this episode. He only toppled over. Oh, twice. That's okay.
The coffee
That's better
beans.
Than before.
We'll give him a pass because it was coffee beans and it was absolutely hysterical. All right, so Angel drops henchman number 4, runs out, and Jira has been captured by Tay, and they're like quickly going to like clip her co, and instead of like, okay, let's make sure that like Angel's taken care of, I don't know.
So this is the part that made me pause. Like, why would you let her go? So what? Angel kills your boss? Promotion. And you get like the plaudits of like bringing Jira back in. You could be like, it's all me. Like, I'm sorry, Tay died, but he was kind of a dick, right?
Yeah, we didn't like him, right? We're better off without him.
There is no benefit to this minion letting Jira go, but he does it anyway.
Yeah.
Something that makes me uncomfortable. Are these scenes, the one earlier with Shari and then this one, just like the way that the men are grabbing the women and clipping their co, mm-hmm. but we know the insinuation is rape or mutilation mm-hmm. against their will. So they don't play it up in this episode very much, but this is the second example of it in this episode. And as Kara stopping to be like, wait a minute, what are the henchmen doing? I also stopped this time, but just to think about what that image is. It affects you when you're watching it because, you know, if the parallel is there to real life, that happens.
Mm-hmm. 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 And it's, you know, it's this irreversible thing, right? Where like once it's done, it cannot be undone. Mm-hmm. And it's a loss, both physical and psychological.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think also because Jira is, as we talked about earlier, the actress is Chinese. And we already mentioned before the fetishization of Asian women on screen, but in also in real life. And often that fetishization, am I saying it right? Fetishization.
There you go.
Yeah, got it.
That's a hard word to say. You got it.
That's why Kara is here. That often leads to violence toward Asian women, not women in general, of course, mm-hmm. but Asian women particularly. Mm-hmm. And this has been a topic in the news for a while now, not just for the Asian Lives Matter movement, but that shooting in Atlanta mm-hmm. where the white gunmen shot and killed 8 women, mm-hmm. 6 of them being Asian women. Yes, mm-hmm. Specifically saying because they were tempting him, right? They were tempting me. I had to eliminate them. So yeah. Again, like that's I not to put a damper on the episode, but that is the imagery.
The episode wants you to put a damper on it, yeah. though, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. With the whole conversation around stifling women's sexuality and independency and agency, but this little nod to race like cannot be overlooked, and it's something we talked about in Fool for Love as well when Spike kills the Chinese Slayer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So see, this is where I was kind of like getting at this earlier when I said this is too on the nose. My worry is that too many people are watching this episode back when it was airing, and because they don't know about things like FGM, and if they are people who have enough privilege in our society to not be as exposed to fetishization and sexual assault themselves, like, they're watching this episode and I'm worried they're like, oh, like, okay, like, good thing that doesn't happen in our society. Good thing this doesn't happen in our lives, in our world, right? And it's like, does the show actually ever effectively communicate to the audience that, like, this is real shit?
Yeah. That violence towards women is tied in with racial violence. And
it reminds me of people who watch The Handmaid's Tale these days and are like, yeah, like things could get really bad for women if we don't do something.
Jeez, we better put a stop to this soon before it comes
like,
here.
You know, it's like, oh, things could be bad in the future if we don't stop. Yeah. It's like, look around you.
Yeah. Open your eyes, right? Yeah.
And okay, so that leads me, and maybe this is, again, another deep question, but if you guys were in charge of this episode, what would you have changed to make it more? I know, I'm sorry. This is like a lot. But if you were like, because Kara, you mentioned like the metaphor because it, you know, fantasy, it's like, okay, maybe it doesn't translate well to people realizing this is an actual real life thing. Like, what would you have done? And you too, Steph, what would you guys have done to be like, hey, let's maybe like help bridge that gap between real life and fantasy and show that, hey, like we're trying to show a very real life situation here, but still also keep it fantasy? Or is this another instance where maybe this isn't the appropriate like topic for this type of show?
Well, you have to give more lines to the women first, right? Yeah. Like Jira needs more, like a more prominent role. And you had already touched on this earlier, Sarah, that it's Angel's show. But like Jira needs a more prominent role. You need more of these other girls who are being like rescued and stuff to have more of a voice. You need to have more explicit conversations about what's actually happening here with the Kos and stuff. Like we only see kind of the one cutting scene. Yeah. And it is explicitly portrayed as this act of rape, which it is, but there's very little context built into that. None of these women ever talk to each other, mm-hmm. right?
They're on ice. They're quiet. They're,
like, I'm struggling to feel like, does this episode actually pass the Bechdel test? I don't think it does. This is my problem with shows like this, especially shows that are depicting issues that affect women and girls in predominantly non-white countries, right? Is it's like, we can't white feminist our way out of this. I know that a lot of Black feminists and feminists from the Global South, they complain about how white feminists will talk about issues like FGM in a very colonial and very Eurocentric way of like looking down on societies that practice this. Not to say that we should condone it, right? But like, there are women from these cultures, like Jira is from this culture, who have a far richer understanding of the nuances and the complexities of what is going on here than we ever could. They have to be the ones who lead. They have to be the voices here. And so the fact that the episode is centering this white male's experience of what's going on and not really portraying Jira fully and completely, that's the issue, right? And if you were talking about kind of like how could we improve this episode, at the end of the day, it comes to you have to reduce Angel's perspective and role and give more of that to Jira and her girls.
Mm-hmm. Something we talk about a lot too between Carr and I is how science fiction and shows like this that deal with alternate realities and magic, they do at least provide you with a space to touch on these conversations. So maybe this also dives a little bit into your first really hard question, Sarah. But at the end of the day, I agree with Kara. I think what we would have to change is definitely the dialogue. And as handsome as he is, Angel has to step back and we have to let the women shine to tell their story.
But I would increase the percentage of screen time that Angel is shirtless to compensate for.
Yeah, like he's just in the background, shirtless, playing with swords perhaps, maybe talking to more Asian women. But... at least I get, like, I think where I land on these kind of topics for shows like this, where they just like, what are you doing? Like, what are we saying here? Right. At least they're opening the door for the conversation to happen 22 years later when we do a podcast about it, you know?
Yeah.
Like at least that's there. So I wouldn't call it kudos. I wouldn't be like, good for you guys, you did it. But I will say, well, what an interesting way to
address. Wait, are you saying you're not going to give Joss Whedon an award for being a feminist?
Well, I mean, no. He worked really hard.
Let us never speak of it. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, they did something really similar in Expecting Less episode 2, mm-hmm. where it was an episode about Cordelia becoming, you know, pregnant without her consent. And, you know, demonically impregnated. And then she literally, yeah, loses her agency, is not herself. But the episode is centered around how, like, the men have to save her. And, you know, and all the interviews that, and all the quotes that we read, you know, all the writers were, oh, this is a great episode for Wesley. And Wesley does this in this episode. And it's like, you not only, like, you know, violated Cordelia's body and her mind in order to tell this story about Wesley. So it's like, had the episode maybe shown it from Cordelia's perspective and not had her be both physically and like mentally violated, it could have maybe been a better episode. But I mean, the whole concept was also just.
Yeah, I'm sure Cordelia will get better treatment in the future.
Kara, you're fired. You're just such a big downer. Stop reminding me of the future, okay, man?
I mean,
but you really hit on one of the problems with Angel, especially Angel season 1 vis-a-vis Buffy, is Cordelia is the only female character in the main cast, right? Yeah. And for many of these episodes, she's really the only female character of note. It's so hard to have a progressive and feminist show when you don't have women in it. and Buffy, for all of its flaws, right? It's not quite as feminist as a lot of people would like to remember it as being. Buffy, for all of its flaws, you had Buffy and Willow, and then later on, you know, Buffy and Willow and Jenny Calendar or Cordelia or, Tara or Anya, right? Like, there were always several women on screen who could have, like, Joyce and then Dawn. Like, they could have different points of view and they could fight and they could argue. When Cordelia is your only woman for an entire season of Angel, like,
yeah,
you're forcing her to do so much in terms of representing women. And yeah, if Cordelia is in trouble, there aren't any other women to help save her. And it's a really unfortunate circumstances with the casting.
Yeah. And we're not coming to Angel to get our feminist fix, you know? I imagine that's not why you're a fan of the show, because it simply cannot have that. It cannot be that for us, because a white dude leads it and his white friend, his Wesley, helps him. And before that, it was Doyle, you know?
Yeah.
So really, this is not the place to dissect.
There were more Irish men on the show than there were women.
And I'm not saying I didn't enjoy that. I'm just saying when they introduce a feminist plot line like this one that is all about violation, that's why we have to step back.
Maybe this isn't like not the right show. Then I think at the end of the day, what I'm getting from everything you guys are saying is like, and I agree, is like this, the idea is like great, but this wasn't the right show to execute the idea. Like this maybe would have been a better fit for like an episode of Buffy.
Or maybe,
I mean, you brought that up earlier, right? Like, yeah.
Or maybe Joss Whedon was like, maybe I'll just take this idea and turn it into Dollhouse. Kind of the same thing.
Oh God, please, not that show.
What a brilliant idea. You guys are all going to love it.
Will we?
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the idea that I was getting as well, too. I was like, I feel like they wanted Angel to come out as this white knight and this hero because that's his role in the show so far. And it's kind of hard to do that when, you know, these white guys are being portrayed as the villains. So we have to somehow make Angel look better than them. And then we have to have Angel save Jira. And then it becomes a story not about Jira, but about Angel. And yeah, I don't think this was the right show for that. But yeah,
it's just funny.
It's a bummer.
You know, it's Angel's show. And of course, he has to be like the white knight and the hero. But over on Buffy, Angel was the damsel in distress like 90% of the time.
Yeah.
But he was still very heroic at the same time, you know?
Yeah.
Because we were seeing Angel from like a female gaze, whereas on this show, you're seeing Angel from a very like male gaze.
And those were the days.
Right? I love damsel in distress Angel. I love when he's in trouble and I love when Buffy saves him. Like,
yeah, when he answers the door shirtless or in his little white tank top.
Angel.
Stereo now.
Kara's like, I'd like to go to bed now. Thank you. Almost there, Kara. Almost there. All right.
Finish this off, Sarah.
I know. I'm trying. Man. You keep asking such good questions.
You're the one asking the questions.
Oh, gosh. No, this is fun. Okay. Continuing on. All right. So Angel saves Jira. And then she disappears off in the truck with her girls and back in Angel's office. He's standing alone at the coffee maker and he's once again contemplating, should I or should I not squish these beans? And he's like, all right, you know what? I'm alone. No one can watch me fail. So he tries and they burst out of the bag just as Wesley and Cordelia walk in. And Wesley's like, Angel, I'm glad we – and he just like completely just like slips on the coffee beans and – oh. He's just such a breath of fresh air.
See, this is problematic because now that he's technically an employee of Angel Investigations, he could put in a workers' comp claim for that.
I thought that as well.
Wait, don't forget to talk about how Wesley offered to wash the coffee beans from the floor.
Yeah, that was funny.
He's so grateful to be employed.
But also, it's like, relax, dude. You're not going to get fired. Angel is – but there's probably a little bit of guilt here. Wesley's thinking back at that time that he threw a net over Angel and had some guys beat him with bats. You know, like, I think he's still trying to compensate for this. I think he's still got some guilt. I think – Wesley feels useless and is trying so hard to be useful. I mean, I feel for him so much. I don't excuse his past actions, but I feel for him.
Oh, I like his intern. Yeah, as his intern energy, right? Like, I will do literally anything. I'm so grateful to be here, getting the experience from such a soft boss.
Right. And honestly, Angel needs someone like Wesley because Cordelia's
not
doing a lot around here.
I'm surprised she like watered the plant in the beginning of the episode because
she doesn't dust. She doesn't do any of that.
We hypothesize that Angel comes back at night and waters the plants to keep them alive because Cordelia's not doing that during the day at all. There's no way. So Jira enters in again. Cordelia's not happy. Look who's here. Can I get you something? Knife to our throats. You can run away. And honestly, I think she's completely justified because, yeah.
Again, Cordy, my queen, for telling it like it is.
And yes, I would have been pissed as well. I was like, get out of here. So Jira and Angel are back in the office together and they butt heads again. Angel's like, you nearly got Wesley and Cordelia killed. I'm glad your girls are safe. Jira said, I had no choice. And Angel says, yes, you did. The script says, Angel can feel his blood rising again. This woman infuriates.
Is that all that's rising?
Yeah, I know. I think that's a euphemism. This woman infuriates him, but it's more than that, and they both know it.
He's got a boner.
Angel, if you're
That's what I always saying. Appreciate Steph spelling it out for me.
Yes, we need it. We need someone to tell us what exactly was rising because I that wasn't clear. Kara and I were a little confused on that one.
It's a boner, you guys.
This answers your question, Kara. If you ever want to know if someone is into you.
Thanks. I'm aware of the boner.
I wasn't sure.
If they're Chinese, there's a red glow.
Doesn't it at one point Wesley tell like one of the girls like feel him up?
He says, "Feel my shirt. It's very hard." But yes, another euphemism. Oh my gosh, this episode. I was really trying to avoid so much of this, you know, for Kara's sake, but, you know.
You really can. Here we are. It's unavoidable.
It is, yeah.
It's okay. You don't have to protect me.
She's going to learn.
I feel like
constant thirst is very fascinating.
We had a lot of balance in this episode. We had some like great, like productive conversation and thirst at the same time. So.
We did. I feel like well-balanced, well-rounded. Yeah. We're split pretty
How
evenly.
Many cups of water do you all have to drink after this?
I've drank so three. Much. I really got to pee. In my opinion, it's not a true podcast episode unless the word boner is spoken at least once.
I agree.
All right. So, Angel, if you're vowed to protect the innocent, Jira, it shouldn't matter which dimension they're from. They're standing closer, heat building between them again. Jira, an easy sentiment when your people are free. Angel, I'm not saying you shouldn't fight Jira. Just know I'll be here to stop you if you cross the line. Oh, stop her how, Angel? What are you going to do?
He's going to dance.
Yeah, he's going to dance her out.
He's going to, like, dance battle.
She's like, get me out of this reality. Or her fin will glow red at the sight.
Don't you love how all these demons who want to escape their reality come here to this one dimension? It's like, are there not infinite other dimensions?
This one is the only one that has Angel on it. They're like he's calling to them.
So you can go to
Kathy the roommate, right? It's like all dimensions you could come to. You come to this one to go to Sunnydale.
Well, this reality has shrimp, so that's why they come here.
Oh.
That's fair.
Isn't there an entire reality that is all made of shrimp?
It's just
that's
shrimp
too much.
People. No. Oh, we just want shrimp available to us.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, that is Sarah, please move on. I don't want to talk about
boners.
That.
I'm sorry. Spoilers.
Yeah, how dare you spoil the all shrimp episode?
God, why did we come here, Kara? I knew it was a bad idea.
Forgive me. I'll add in the spoiler section. Come back next week to hear us talk about the spoiler or the shrimp spoiler episode.
How do you feel to be outnumbered by Canadians in your podcast, Sarah?
Yeah, what's
this
it feel
this
like?
This is a very unique experience. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how I feel. The American in me is a little like.
Can you hear the extra U's in our words?
Yeah. I can. I feel like Canadians are supposed to be a little nicer. No, I'm just kidding.
The problem is when you put all of us in the room together like this, like I feel like we're going to do a hostile takeover of your podcast.
Oh, I love it. It's great. This is how Leia feels every time she's on with Tabby, Leah, and I, except it's worse because we're related. It's just like a triple threat and takedown, except they really just kind of like bully me the entire time and Leia just laughs at me. So it is what it is. You guys are still nicer than Tabby and Leah, so come on anytime. Not to them.
Well, they're always sick, so they're always feeling sad. Yeah.
Okay, that's very kind of you to say. I can tell you, as someone who's lived with them, they're just always in bad moods.
Ooh, coming death. For them when they're not love even them. Here. I love it.
Yeah, you hear that, Tabby and Leah? If you're even listening right now, calling them out. No, okay. In all seriousness, though, I do like this moment apart from the sexual tension because I think Angel is also speaking metaphorically to himself, like saying like, hey, like I'm going to stop you. I think this is also like – I think they're trying to address the whole Angel not being able to sleep with women and all that stuff in this episode, kind of like Angel almost speaking to himself like, hey, Angelus, if you ever – come out, like I will be here to stop you. It feels like a very metaphorical, like Angel will be here to stop Angelus, or I guess to a certain extent. Because Jira next says, she goes, I don't need an extra conscience. I'll do what I think is right. And so I think there's a lot of like subtext here of like Angel being like, you know, exhibiting self-control and all the other stuff like that. But anyway, the energy builds within them. Jira withdraws, says, fine, we understand each other then. I have to go. Angel doesn't try to stop her. She turns to leave, revealing the soft, glowing illumination of her co. Before Angel fully registers this, she's gone. And then it says, Angel watches the door where she's left, powerfully unsettled by this creature and more than a little turned on.
Ooh. And then he shouts, no one come in here for 5 minutes. Leave me alone.
He goes down in his elevator and it's like so slow. And he's like, come on, come on.
Yeah. I'll be back up at lunch.
Take the rest of the day off. I'll be in my bat cave.
And that's the end. That's mm-hmm. the end of the episode.
And that's the end. That's the end. That's and then we get the Wesley end. And Angel's dance off.
Oh, yeah, true.
No, that was 10,000 times more enjoyable. Thank you guys so much. And we have decided, Leigh and I unanimously, we had a vote. We decided that you guys will come on for every problematic episode of Angel.
So you're making us co-hosts, is what you're saying.
Yeah. What I'm hearing is we have a job. Only if they're like bottom five Angel episodes of all time. Like apparently right. that's what we're here. That's what I'm hearing.
No, you guys made this episode so much more enjoyable, so much more fun, and it was definitely fun to look forward to it and not be like, oh, we have to talk about She. So thank you guys so much for coming on. This was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Please come back anytime.
Well, I will say, though, that we've had both of you on our podcast recently, and I don't know when this episode will drop for you. But very likely, if anyone goes over to Prophecy Girls to listen to us, we've had Investigating Angel on one of our bonus holiday mm-hmm. episodes. A nice little it's treat. Good. And it was really fun. We've had Sarah on before as well. So go check us out. This is me plugging on your podcast, everybody.
Yeah. No, do it. Thank you for taking my job.
More. Go ahead.
Close this out. No, just kidding. No, but thank you again, Prophecy Girls. And you guys definitely, definitely check them out. They're fantastic. And I love listening to you guys when I get the chance because you always have great things to say. And it's always things that I'm like, oh, I missed that on the podcast. And I got to go back and re-record it and talk about it all over again. No. Let us know your guys' thoughts on this episode. Do you think this is the worst episode of the series? Do you think there are far worse ones? Leia's shaking her head no. But we want to know your guys' thoughts. If you guys were going to rewrite this episode, how would you have done it better? And I don't know, we asked a couple of pretty tough questions in this episode, and I'm curious if anybody has any answers, because that is, I feel like, kind of an ongoing conversation as we look back at some of these older shows on our newer podcasts and stuff. So as always, guys, thanks so much for joining us, and we will see you next time. Thanks so much for listening to Investigating Angel. If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to follow, subscribe, and review us on all platforms. You can also find us on Instagram at Investigating Angel Podcast, and you can email us at investigatingangelpodcast@gmail.com.